Welcome to the VIP Jaswal Report, the report that asks insightful questions and gets revealing answers from people whose lives are faced with dilemmas and challenges beyond the ordinary. Before I introduce my guest, let me ask you this. If you only had one choice, who would you choose, God or family? If you believe in separation of church and state, then do you also believe in separation of church and mind? And should your pastor dictate your life in exchange for a one-way ticket to heaven? My guest has been a member of the inner circle of a megachurch for 25 years. She then left the megachurch because some of the practices went against her conscience. In the process, she lost her husband, her business, and a large part of her life. But she never lost her faith in God. Her name is Pamela King Cable. Welcome to the show, Pam.
Hi. Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, when I think of a megachurch, a few words come to mind. Euphoria, rock star, rock concert, miracles, and scandal. But that's just my perception. What's the real definition of a megachurch?
Well, the real definition of a megachurch is actually a Protestant church that draws at least 2,000 people to its weekly services. I believe that they are arguably the most important influence on contemporary American Christianity today. I think at the last count there were over 1,000 megachurches in America today.
What sort of people go there if you were to profile them?
People go to megachurches for many reasons. Many of them have a need. They need a miracle. They believe in miracles. Many of them go to be part of something bigger than themselves, something important to the cause of Christ, to follow someone bigger than them spiritually. And then many of us were raised in the megachurch. And I want you to realize that the vast majority within the megachurch are educated people, businessmen and women, leaders in their community. And then, you know, like I said, for many of us, he was a father figure, and we went and stayed for many, many years because we were raised in the church.
But isn't religion and the belief in God a very intimate situation? So
yes.
Why would you, not that there's anything wrong, but why would you go to a mega church as opposed to your local smaller church?
I think, like I said, it's a draw of charisma. There's a charismatic pull there. Many of these pastors indeed are rock stars. They draw people because of what they give to the congregation. Many of them are faith healers or believe in laying on of hands for the sick and the afflicted. So there's a big pool there.
So it's very pastor-driven.
Yes, very pastor-driven indeed.
Well, it's interesting because as a country we fought so hard to be free, and then we voluntarily enter into a situation that controls our very existence and the way we live.
Yes.
In the name of religion.
Exactly. I agree with you 100%. For me, I felt a disruption in my spirit when I started to encounter things that did not set well with me. So,
well, you were part of the inner circle.
Yeah, I was part
That's
of
right.
an inner circle.
And
yes.
That sounds very mysterious. It's almost like a secret society. What happens in the inner circle?
Well, the inner circle of a large megachurch are mostly the employees and volunteers and a lot of the big money givers who are there to circle the wagons. In other words, they are protection for the ministry itself. Some of us were
why
more
do they, Why does a ministry need protection?
Well, a ministry needs protection because a lot of times they're traveling all over the world, and they want, you know, the good news to be spread about the ministry. They don't want any negative publicity, none whatsoever. And so, you know, there's always a smile on their face, and everything is good, and everything is all about saving the lost at any cost. So they protect the ministry by just staying involved and watching the allegiance of everyone else within the inner circle.
Almost running it like a business.
Quite, yes.
So the outer circle, in terms of the followers, they enjoy the faith,
yes,
but the inner circle determines strategy. Is that true?
Yes, that is correct. Outer circle people in a large megachurch, what I would call an outer circle, would be the members, visitors, and folks who attend on a once or twice a week basis and go home. They have no clue as to what's really going on behind the scenes.
Now, you enjoyed a position of privilege by being in the inner circle.
Yes.
So why did you leave?
I felt a disruption in my spirit. There were questions that I had. There were things that happened to me that when I was when I went to the ministry team, or when I went to someone who was supposed to be able to answer my questions, I was basically told there was something wrong with me. There was something wrong with my faith.
Can you give us an example?
Sure. Basically, what happened to me was I went on a crusade to Hawaii, and I went because it was my 10th wedding anniversary. And when I got there, I realized that we were not allowed to stay in the same rooms with our husbands. The wives were not allowed to stay in the same room with their husbands, bottom line. And when I asked about that, why would that happen? They said, the pastor said, that we are to get before the Lord and concentrate our minds and our thoughts and our actions to the Lord before the crusade. And that wasn't a good enough answer for me, because
that doesn't make sense.
The scripture says that what God has joined together, let no man separate. It didn't make sense to me. And he said, well, the sports teams, when they travel with their wives, they don't sleep in the same hotel rooms with their wives. And I thought to myself, well, maybe so, but we're not a sports team either. We're families. And, you know, he was separating us. He was tearing us apart as a family. And that was the beginning of the end for me.
When the beginning of the end started to happen,
yes,
did you get any backlash? I mean, do the ministries have their own group of enforcers to ensure obedience?
Absolutely. There are many times when you will hear things preached from the platform about people who go against the ministry. You're told that you could die in a car accident on the way to church and lift up your eyes in hell. We were told that if we left the church, we would never amount to anything for God. We were told that if we go against the church and its teachings, that we were leeched in our minds and in our souls. Demons were like leeches, sucking out the spirit of God within us. There was always some curse or something that had to do with fear. We were, you know, dangled over hell many, many times. And I know this sounds crazy to a lot of people, and as to why an intelligent person would stay in a situation like that. But when you've been raised in this, and when you followed this person for many, many years, and you believe with your whole heart and mind that he has the favor of God, the ear of God, you believe it. I mean, it's a mind control.
So when you started this crusade of finding your own journey to God, how did they interrupt or interact with you to try and stop that?
Well, they basically had hold of my husband's arm, and I had hold of the other, and it was a tug of war. And
you had to make a choice.
And he had to make a choice. And for me, it would have been easier to deal with a man who was dealing with drug addiction or alcoholism or even another woman. But when you're fighting against a man's perception of God, there's no winning in that situation. So that's where it was very difficult for me.
And is he still there?
In the end. Pardon me?
Is he still part of the inner circle?
I don't know. No. I really don't know. I don't think that he works there full-time anymore, but I don't know that he is part of that inner circle anymore. I don't know that. It's
so
been
they,
many years.
So they believe that you sinned?
Oh, absolutely.
On their terms?
Oh, absolutely. I became the apostate. I became the dog returning to its vomit. I was called the dark angel. I was, you know, I was totally shunned from the community, of the church there, from the many people I have seen from that from that particular congregation out in public and they've turned around and walked the other way.
Harassment, in a way.
Yes, it is. It is. And it's sad because the thing of it is that I'm not the only person that has experienced that. In the process of writing my novel, I interviewed over 100 people who had been not just to this particular church, but to other mega churches, and have experienced many of the same things. And the similar thread that was running through all of our lives was that we experienced horrific losses upon leaving those churches, and shunning was a big part of that. You know,
but does the mega church believe in the power of forgiveness?
Yes, they do.
But they didn't forgive you.
No, they did not.
Would they still take you back unconditionally?
I don't believe so, no. I know of a situation where a member of their church passed away, and someone who had left their church tried to attend a funeral there, and they were stopped at the door. They were not allowed to enter.
So where is the power of religion and God in all of this, if they're stopping you from attending a funeral?
Well, that's a good question. That's what I would like to know.
And the irony of all of this is you left the mega church, but you did not leave your faith in God.
No, I did not. I'm still a Christian. I'm still a woman of great faith. I love God with all of my heart. And I believe that God was pulling me away. And this is, you know, I think that there has to be an awakening at some point. And I don't know how that's going to happen, but I just know that there's a lot of hurting people out there. Church shouldn't hurt. That's the bottom line, is that church should not hurt. And it does. It hurts so many people these days.
Well, let's talk about pastors and the business of the megachurch. You know, on a Sunday morning, sometimes I watch the pastors speak on TV. And I've got to say, extraordinary personalities. And they are truly amazing, motivational speakers for religion.
They are.
In addition, I also enjoy watching the audience because it's almost like they've been hypnotized by this wonderful speaker.
Right. That's very true.
So my question is, can anyone become a pastor?
I think so. I think if someone feels the call of God on their life to pastor a church, many of them will go to theological school or seminary and become a pastor. I think anybody, if they feel, like I said, the call of God, they can become a pastor.
But you need to go to this school and then get qualified.
Yes. Yes.
You can't just start preaching from a pulpit.
Not really. Although some have in the past. I believe that there have been some pastors who just have taken up the call on their own and have gone out and started churches, maybe in the distant past, but I don't think so much today.
Now, when I look at mega churches, they're beautiful buildings, very well maintained.
Right.
How are they funded?
By the donations of the people in the services, and also those donations that come across from the air, from being on air. People are encouraged to give their tithes and their offerings.
So it is a business because it depends on the number of followers and the value of donations.
Yes, yes. And if sometimes these megachurches have have a television station and they may have some sponsorship there. But for the most part, I believe that it is definitely through the tithes and offerings of the people that give to these big churches.
Now, you were part of the inner circle, so can you...
Yes.
Give us or enlighten us, when you get all these donations, how now does this work? Because obviously it's a lot of cash, a lot of checks.
Right. I don't know how that all works because I was never privy to the finances, but I do know that when my husband was on the ministry team and that the crusades were being preached all over the place, the United States and the world, they would certainly sit and count all of this money after or during the crusade, and you know what they did with it after that. I don't know.
We call it a crusade, but actually it sounds like a concert tour.
Yes, well, you know, I'm so used to calling it that because that's what that they, you know, they called it, was a crusade for souls. And yeah, it is quite like a rock concert. You're absolutely correct. The music, everything can be that way, certainly.
You know, when I see images of the pastors on the Sunday morning when I'm watching these channels.
Right, right.
They look very wealthy. They're immaculate, extremely well-groomed. I mean, how much does a pastor make?
You know, that's a good question as well. I know some of them make a lot of money. It bothers me when I see a pastor in an Armani suit and fine leather shoes and drives a Mercedes and lives in a huge, huge home, fancy this and fancy that, when they've got people in their congregation who are having trouble feeding their children or making the mortgage payment or you know, just buying groceries. We need to take a good hard look at this. And I'm wondering why people don't. And that
well,
really
is there a watchdog
me.
That monitors them?
Well, in some churches they're supposed to be. I don't know. Every church is different. Nobody really governs them. In my particular case, the pastor, he pastored as he pleased because there was no board. There were no deacons. There was no denomination for him to answer to. So he was the only way, and his way was the only way. And so there was no watchdog that I know of, and so. You know, these kinds of men can be dangerous, in my opinion. I mean, look what happened to in the past, to in history. All you have to do is just go back to a lot of the cults that derived from the early megachurches. So there, you know, there should be a watchdog group on all of this.
It's truly run like a business because it seems the pastors surround themselves with the best professionals, like, you know, top quality lawyers, top quality accountants, top quality marketing teams, top quality public relations agencies.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of, and like I said before, there's a lot of fear involved. We were, you know, involved in being held over hell, and the fear that was instilled upon us to, you know, stay where we were and not to leave the church. And, you know, a lot of people were...
What does the fear center on? That you won't go to heaven, or...?
Yes, absolutely, that you will end up in hell.
The hell could be on earth as well.
Yes, it could be. One of the horrific things is personal prophecy that some of these pastors give. I mean... I have a very difficult time when you're, you know, when someone is screaming personal prophecy in your face, telling you that, you know, that you're full of the devil and that you have to get delivered and that you need to stay in church and, you know, all of these things that they say to basically control you, and they do.
And how do you rise in the ranks?
Rising in the ranks can be anything from being a choir member to being an usher to volunteering your time in the mailroom. You know, it happens over time. From, like, in my particular church, rising in the ranks developed were the people who had been there for many, many years who grew up in the ministry. They just became... because they were so entrusted with the secrets of the church that they just became part of the inner circle immediately.
Does the economy dictate the state of the business of the megachurch? Because in a recession, people are looking for hope and prosperity?
Yes, I believe so. I believe that the prosperity message does encourage people in an economy like this to attend church. You know, I'm not...
But are some of these organizations... taking advantage of the vulnerable.
Right. The you know, the prosperity message is pretty much a term that's coined to sum up the teachings of the pastors who preach that God wants his followers to be prosperous.
Well, can you twist the prosperity message from a pastor by meaning personal enrichment as opposed to monetary enrichment? Or are they being very specific and saying you will be rich financially?
I think it has to do with money. I think it has to do with everything. and particular money. I've seen many marathon fundraisers on many of the television programs who are trying to raise money to buy a satellite or what have you. They are all about giving out of your need and just believing that God is going to bless you. And, again, I know the fear involved. I swallowed that dogma for years and chased those feelings of eternal security until my feet were worn to bloody stubs. You know, I mean, I think it all... It also depends on whether you take the scriptures literally.
Now, let's say you are a mega church dropout.
Mm-hmm.
From a business perspective, in this particular economy where, we are struggling.
Right.
How do they outnumber the dropouts versus the new recruits? What's happening? Are people beginning to see?
I think we're seeing the light?
And dropping out, or are they seeing a different kind of light and joining?
I think we're seeing a lot of people who are joining mega churches. Once again, there's an upswing in televangelism. I think we're seeing more and more programs on TV. I think that in this economy, people are willing to do anything to get the favor of God, to be blessed financially, blessed in their homes, blessed in their jobs. And I think a lot of them were raised in church, and so they go back to that. And so I'm thinking we're seeing an upswing in the attendees. But I also think that maybe they're being a little more wise this time. I'm hoping that's the case. Anyway,
do you think some of these pastors take their influence too far?
Absolutely, they do.
I mean, are they controlling people's lives?
Yes, they are. I think they control people's lives from the boardroom to the bedroom.
And what have you seen? What's your biggest horror story that you can share?
Well, the biggest horror story for me, of course, was the situation that I had where my family was literally torn apart. It was a tug of war for me for about 4 or 5 years, and I lost in the end. I lost everything I had. I ended up pretty much on the street and lost my husband, my home, my car, my way of life, my children. I lost everything.
What's the biggest horror story that you can share with us apart from your own life? What have you seen been done to others?
The biggest horror story that I have seen that has been done to others is pretty much the same thing that has been done to me. The fact that so many lives have been destroyed by the families being torn apart. Certainly God is the creator of the family, and I've seen many, many families torn apart by mega churches and pastors.
Well, obviously this is a business, and so you depend on donations.
Yes.
Are there any horror stories that you can share that show how, to what lengths they will go to fund their existence?
Yes, I do know this of situations where they have approached the widows, the elderly, the widowers, and asked them to will their homes to the church after they pass away, which to me is an atrocious thing for someone to do, to encourage anyone to will their home or their properties or their belongings to a church. If someone wants to do it of their own free will, that's one thing. But to be coerced into something like that, I think that's just horrendous, just absolutely unscrupulous.
Don't these things become legal issues?
I'm sure they do become legal issues. I'm sure that there have been legal issues along these lines. I would imagine so. I don't know of any in particular on my end, but I do know of people who have been spoken to by the church and asked to will their property to the church when they pass away.
And they do.
And they either do or they don't. They refuse. Some do, some don't. And so, and you wonder how many were absolutely threatened or harassed or made to feel that that's what God would want them to do.
Well, let's talk about faith healing. Mm-hmm. And this one I'm going to enjoy because I'm very skeptical about this issue. Mm-hmm. For me, you know, faith healing competes with Obamacare and is not recognized by most medical insurance companies. But I do believe in miracles, and so does my wife, and she thinks our marriage is a miracle, so there you go. But on a serious note, isn't this really a practice that is curious at best and a facade at worst?
Well, I will not deny the power of God. I believe...
Neither do I. But a pastor giving the impression that,
that he
or she is closer to God than his followers.
Right.
That I find that you're playing with people's minds.
That's exactly right, because you've actually hit the nail on the head there, because I do believe that you can receive a miracle or a healing in your own living room. We are all able to talk to God on our own terms. God honors faith wherever he finds it. And so it's bewildering to me that there are so many pastors who believe that because they can raise their hands and touch people on the head and what have you, that they're going to get a healing much faster and easier than if the person would try to get it themselves, which is not right, in my opinion.
It's a little bizarre.
A little bizarre, a lot bizarre. There's been a lot of bizarre things that have happened within a mega church.
I mean, if people heal, to me, it's due to proper medication and also due to the power of positive thinking.
Absolutely. There's divine healing in medicine. God put it there for a reason. So,
but, you know, a smack on the forehead and then being caught by three people while you lie and fall back doesn't exactly convince me.
No. And me
and
neither.
That's my issue, that I'm not able
and
to be convinced of this.
Exactly. And many people will get up from that situation and not be healed. And if they're not healed, it's because of their faith, not because of the pastor's faith, you see. So, it's discouraging for the person who wanted to find a healing or came just specifically for a miracle. It's very discouraging. So those are some of the bizarre things that have happened, and there's been a lot of bizarre things that have happened within a megachurch.
One thing I've noticed when I watch on Sundays, these pastors, they take advantage of the fact that the Bible is confusing, or so they say that the Bible is confusing. I actually don't find the Bible confusing. I believe God's given us three instruments in order for us to navigate life.
Right.
And that is belief in religion.
Right.
Our own conscience.
Yes.
And equally important, our brain. And the challenge is really to use them together and not just rely on one.
Right.
That's where things go wrong.
I believe you're right.
Oh, that's great. I should be a pastor.
I believe you're absolutely correct there.
And I just find that very manipulating when they say, well, you know what, I have found the clarity of what the Bible says.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you're a human being, it's just an opinion.
Correct.
God's given us a brain.
Free will.
For a certain purpose.
He has. He definitely has.
And at the end of the day, our conscience tells us really what's right and what's wrong.
Exactly. Exactly. And we shouldn't be persecuted if we use our conscience to get out of a situation that we feel uncomfortable in.
I agree with you. Now, your book is Televenge.
It is.
Tell us about it.
Televenge is about the dark side of televangelism and the light of unconditional love. It's about faith in God and having incredible, invincible courage in one's beliefs. So that's basically what the book is about.
Well, on your Facebook page, you did mention a quote from Virginia Woolf, and I'm going to read that. It says, every secret of a writer's soul, every experience of her life, every quality of her mind is written large in her works. I'm guessing you used a large part of your personal experience and pain when writing this book.
I did, absolutely. The book has received wonderful reviews, and I've just been very thrilled with it, and my life certainly came into play when I sat down to write the story many years ago. 10 years of writing this book has now developed into what it is today. Televenge was certainly a tragedy that has become my triumph, and I'm very proud of it. Thank you.
Why did you not write a memoir instead?
Well, I did not want to implicate or embarrass any members of my family, and out of respect for my family, I did not want to do that.
Did you also fear repercussion?
Of course. I mean, I think anyone who writes a story like I've written, I mean, there's always that nagging sense that there's someone who's going to come out and say, oh, well, you know, she doesn't know what she's talking about or whatever. But I certainly...
Well, I think 25 years as part of a mega church gives you pretty much good authority to know what you're writing about.
I certainly do. Everything that happened to me is, you know, I put it into a journal over the years, and I drew from that journal to write the story. And, you know, I did not...
You said it took you 10 years.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
During this time, mm-hmm. did members of the megachurch ever get wind of the fact that you were attempting to write a book?
No. No. A couple of my best friends knew who had come out of the church with me. There were a few members of my family who knew that I was writing this story. Certainly the people who had become my readers and close friends reading the drafts of the novel knew. But I really didn't sit down to write it for the Christian audience or you know, to come against any ministry or minister or anything like that. I wrote it because...
Well, you're exposing another side.
Yes, I had a story.
You're going to be affecting their business, so to speak.
Right, right. And I'm a storyteller, and that's what I do. So.
What do you think they would have done had they found out that you were writing this book?
I've been out of that church for so many years now, I really don't know how they would react. I really don't know the answer to that question. I don't know. I don't know. And it's curious to me. I don't know how they'll react as the book takes off, and hopefully that it does. But I certainly, I can't worry about that. I have to write what, you know, the story isn't about that church. The story isn't about my story particularly. I drew from what I knew and created a story, and that's what it's about.
And that's what makes it dangerous, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. Where can we get your book?
Televenge can be purchased at Amazon.com, BarnesandNobles.com. It's available as an ebook on Kindle and Nook and can be purchased from my website and at fine bookstores everywhere.
Well, thank you for coming on the show, Pam. God bless you.
God bless you very much. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is it for today. Thank you for listening. We have discussed, so you decide. Feel free to send in your comments to our Facebook page at facebook.com/Fox News Radio or tweet us at Fox News Radio on Twitter. I'm your host, Vip Jaswal, and keep your ears open for the next airing of the Vip Jaswal Report coming soon.